This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The latest news and talk. Hot, fresh, and delivered when you want it. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
Adil Ntshabalang, of course, is my guest next. I've got so many questions to ask him, but of course, time's not going to be limited. But yeah, he'll be able to also just give us his ideas on what's going on. So let me just bring Adil Ntshabalang into the conversation. Adil, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective. How are you, bro?
I'm good, and how are you, Debo?
I'm really, really good, man.
Lovely.
Yeah, they let me put things on my roof, and now I've got solar, and now they're giving me 100 days of...
Don't regret the investment.
No.
Giving it back.
Adil Ntshabalang, no regret at all, Adil. No regret at all. But I couldn't resist just putting that out there to you.
Yeah, I know. Last time you were still actually in between whether you want to go for it.
Absolutely.
Or what.
Adil, just before I get to all of the other aspects of things, give the listeners an indication, because you know a lot of conspiracy theories will be made, and a lot of things will be said about diesel and you know, when systems were working before, when things were better with Jacob Zuma, and then there was this, and Gogo was there, and all of these kind of things. Just give us a brief, and I know the conversation's not about this, but just give us a brief understanding of literally, you know, why we can have an element of 100 days now, because that's what we're pushing on. We're approaching 100 days of not having load shedding.
Yeah.
What's going on in a brief you know explanation?
Look, I think one is the fact that all the lies that were spewed about Eskom's power plants being old and needed to be literally shut down and literally mothballed or even been broken apart has been disproved.
Yeah.
No. Eskom's power plants are not old. They're in perfect running condition. All they needed was to be given special attention, which is maintenance, repairs, fixing, as well as refurbishment. And that's what it has happened. I mean, the end of load shedding was not as a result of anything else except what we've been saying all this time. I mean, it's been years we've been hammering this fact that Eskom's plants are completely, you know, neglected. Mm. Management has not been paying attention to the fundamentals, which is really running the business of generating electricity, which means you have to have your ship as well as your fleet operating optimally. It means everything must be working on a regular day-to-day basis. If anything breaks down, you must fix it. And you must do your ordinary maintenance as well as, you know, upgrade of the plant. Remember, this is a working machinery that needs to be upgraded on a regular basis. So this has proven that all the lies, because everything was a lie, that Eskom was a broken down, was a dead horse that needed to be literally let die, as well as introduce new other alternatives.
Then I have to ask you this, Adil. What leads that narrative that is built? Is it about money and more funding and more money from the state and access to finances? There's a massive difference, as you've just, you know, said, between neglected and you need to be maintained versus old and needs to be replaced. There's a massive difference there. What was driving that conversation that said they're old and they needed to be replaced? Was it just ignorance of what's going on, the facts in front of them? Or was there a deliberate drive to, if we say old and replaceable, we have access to a lot of more money?
No, you see, the argument was always pretext on the basis that Eskom must buy new generation capacity, which means they must go outside and look for private power producers. And those power producers will be able to bring about power plants, which will bring in electricity that will substitute Eskom. That failed dismally, because when Eskom started buying up window 5, it started off with window 4, 5, 6, and now they're at window 7. None of those windows have produced any, you know, megawatt into the grid, has not been able to even been, you know, some of the windows are actually struggling to close because the tariffs were too low. And it shows that it was just an intention to literally hollow out Eskom's revenue base. And in turn, ensure that these guys who are interested in profiteering without producing any electricity can continue eating. Remember, Eskom has a huge amount of revenue that is generating. I mean, over 300 billion on an annual basis.
Yeah.
And there are people who are interested in that revenue, but are not interested in the burden that comes with it, which means building power plants, making sure that those power plants function and are optimally operational. So what they did is they eyed Eskom's power plants. They wanted to buy out those power plants, maintain them as what they are doing now.
Got you.
After that, charge us a hefty fortune in order to run them and to produce the electricity that is required. Because privatization was on steroids. You know,
buy them for a pittance.
Yeah, get them for nothing, literally. They were at some point suggesting that just buy them for the cost of Midupe and Kusile, you know, whatever Eskom is owing. Buy it for that price, and then the rest inherit the entire machinery. As that failed and didn't work, because South Africans, for the first time I saw all of us united to say, we are tired, we are angry, and we cannot tolerate load shedding when we know the fundamentals. I mean, for the first time, the public took upon itself to learn the sciences of electricity and energy generation, and they started understanding what is power plants and what makes these power plants work. They started to understand coal and what is the purpose of coal in this whole mix and how it has been benefiting South Africa's energy generation. And it became a very lively environment, you know, where everybody has got involved. And because of that, there was a public backlash, and there was a literal withdrawal on that strategy of shutting down and selling off Eskom. And then the whole unbundling process became about how they can literally just split it to introduce new suppliers, which have not actually done anything. They've not even been able to bring in a simple power company that could actually rival Eskom. We would have thought that when we spoke about the issue of IPPs, those IPPs will be today sitting as giants competing against Eskom. We haven't seen any of that. There's not been any capacity of any single company to literally rival or even contest with Eskom. So what does that tell you? The whole thing was a lie. They wanted to just inherit Eskom's power plants for nothing. And on those basis, take us as citizens for granted and literally rob us on a daylight.
And get your hands on some really, really critical state assets and whilst you're doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's what they wanted.
Let's talk about how things are then paid for, Adil. So approaching the 100 days load shedding, Eskom eyeing this average tariff increase of 36% next year. I'm going to throw the numbers at you. Follows 12% increase this particular year, compared to the inflation rate of 5.2%. The methodology that is applied is 1/3 years to April, 30, 2028. And those outer years will be 12% in 2026, 27, 9% in 27, 28. And then also, you've always made the point to me, and you say something like the utility and the utility, and you also would argue that the tariffs, you know, that Eskom is engaging in don't effectively, you know, pay for everything in essence.
Yeah.
Is this in essence these kind of tariffs that people will have in front of them and the kind of numbers, and they're going to be shocked when they see, oh, you know what, there's a number of 44, you know, percent being looked at by municipalities and this and that, whatever. Is it in essence just related to, you know, because it's been neglected and because it's now being maintained and we are fixing and this, somebody's got to pay for it. And you know, it's about time that one began to pay for this thing called electricity, and you effectively pay for electricity. You don't just get it for free, you know, anymore.
Look, the current burden at Eskom is really not to do with electricity generation. It's got to do with paying up for the IPPs.
That's it.
Those IPPs are hollowing out a lot of Eskom's money. So whatever increases you're seeing, those are increases to cushion out the payments that are required in order to sustain these IPPs' burden cost. That's really been the main issue.
Okay.
And unfortunately, you know, people don't want to understand it and really don't want to agree with it, because most of them are invested in IPPs and are seeing for themselves a window of opportunity. But the fact of the matter is, IPPs are taking away money from Eskom.
Yeah.
That should have been now giving us the opportunity to be paying less. We had thought when they introduced independent power producers, that this will be independent, will be able to generate electricity and sell independently to
Eskom. That's the way they sold that particular aspect.
Yeah. But that narrative didn't fly out like that. They ended up actually asking for subsidies. They ended up asking for opportunities to be literally carried on onto Eskom's balance sheet without having to take any of their own risk in terms of capital investment.
What do you make of then the argument that says, because you've raised a very, very critical element here whereby one would have thought it was going to be engaged this way and you're going to buy your electricity and engage all of these IPPs and the private sector will work there and that hasn't materialized. What do you make that, you know, there's a suggestion that the transmission tariffs too low to unlock any private sector investment or enough private sector investment in transmission. What do you make of that particular?
Which transmission tariffs? Because there's no transmission tariffs as we speak.
Yeah.
Eskom generates and then sends it currently on the existing transmission lines, which are already paid for by Eskom and maintained by Eskom. And they send it to distribution substations. On the substation, part of it is maintained between Eskom
and the model that was presented, you know, presumably with those transmission tariffs.
No, the transmission tariffs is when these guys have to produce.
That's
and
it.
Then wheel.
And that's where Eskom
will charge them. Yeah, the new company, the transmission NTSC, you know, the National Transmission Company of South Africa. So NTSCA will then say to the new customers and say, whoever, IPP or Eskom or whoever comes into the network transmission, they'll say that because you want us to wheel your electricity, take it from where you're producing it to your end customer, this is the amount of cost that we'll charge you for them to recover their cost in terms of maintaining the transmission. So transmission will be paid either way.
Mm.
It's already been paid on the tariff that we pay.
Mm.
So when the tariff increases happen, in that tariff is already included right now in terms of transmission costs. So there's not going to be a new bundle of costs, but because they've broken it apart, transmission company will have to find its own. Currently, it's got its own customers, which is ourselves, South Africans, right?
You're right.
But it's got its own suppliers, which is Eskom among them, and then the new IPPs, et cetera, coming in online. So what they're going to have to do is to distinguish to say whoever is coming on board, what are they bringing and how is it going to be transmitted? And that is the current situation they are going through. They have not yet, as yet, set up a new tariff altogether for transmission alone. So they still bulk it up in terms of Eskom's tariff as we speak.
Sure.
You know, then they will take a pinch of that. If it is 1 rand, say, for instance, 20 cents will be transmission, 60 cents will be generation, and then another 20 cents will be distribution. That is how the model would most likely trickle down towards the end of consumers. So each unit right now would have its own cost center as well as a profit center. That's how they are looking at it. So generation, transmission, as well as the distribution part of it. So that's how the model would work. So when they say to you a tariff will be 2 rand, for instance, per kilowatt of our electricity, then you know in that 2 rand you've already paid for your transmission, you've already paid for your distribution onto the municipal substation grid. But the challenge is, all of these things, we are the people, as the South Africans, we are the ones who pay for it. Not a single producer pays anything. They just receive dividend as well as revenue, as well as income from Eskom, or in this case, the NTCSA, which is the transmission, the National Transmission Company of South Africa. They get paid, and then they recover it from customers. The arrangement is still under Eskom. That is why Eskom is asking for a 44% tariff increase, because in that tariff increase, they have to recover all of the expenses that they are currently incurring.
Yeah, those are their costs. That is the point I was about to make to you, because I then wanted to move what you're talking about, Adil, to the beginning of the conversation then again. So when to a 101 conversation, whereby you simplify it for me and for the listeners, whereby when somebody does then begin to read about these 36% and 5.2% and 12% in 2026, 27%, in essence, what we are working with there is the Eskom tariffs based on its cost, that and those costs incurred, I suppose also, it's got to prove that those costs incurred have been efficient and they've got to detail all of those particular things, as you would have said to me last time.
Yeah, yeah.
Got
Look, the current model of Eskom is quite an ingenious model. It's a very clever, intelligent, well-designed model. Remember, we are not paying for the capital.
Yeah.
We're not paying for the power plant.
True story.
Right? The power plants have already been paid for and are debt-free.
Mm.
So what we're paying for is the cost, like, for instance, your fuel cost, your coal, your ingredients that actually adds up to creating the fuel. You're paying for your engineering cost. You're paying for your employees. You're paying for the auto, what you call it, the components that are used in Eskom. You're paying for what? You're paying for the power plants, refurbishment. You're paying for everything that goes into the cost that makes up what Eskom is all about, right?
Mm.
So on those bases, Eskom brings it's almost like a, you know, income and expenditure statement. And so this is our expenditure statement. This is our income statement. In order for us to reach this income, we need to charge this tariff. So between your income and expenditure, you then design to say to reach this level of income, we need to expense out, you know, sort of issue out at cost level this level of tariff that will then generate for us this amount of money. And at the end of the day, we'll be able to sell this amount of gigawatts hour in terms of tariff that we'll be selling out to customers.
And how, Adil, does it clean up its balance sheet? You know, there's obviously, you know, those what was the package deal that it got last year? 254 billion rand.
254 billion. Yeah.
So how does it clean up its balance sheet? Just with the
That actually was a capital injection, literally.
Yeah.
In order to pay back for some of the expenses that Eskom is incurring on building the power plant, which was Medupi and Kusile. So those ones have already completely been, you know, the debt that was taken against Eskom, which is well bank debt for financing the power plant purchases, building program, right?
Yeah.
And then that debt is still existing and still needs to be literally reduced further.
Right.
So what Eskom has been doing, they are paying off the interest against the debt.
Yeah.
Because the interest is quite high. So that is what the one part of it. The other part of it was to pay for the IPPs that Eskom had incurred. And then the other injection of it was the capital injection where Eskom did an emergency request for additional diesel budget.
Mm.
If you recall, it was about 30 billion at the time.
Yeah.
And Treasury had to do an emergency injection of it. So whenever Treasury injects into Eskom, it is not a debt.
Yeah.
It is actually an investment into Eskom. It's like literally shoring up its capital reserves.
Mm.
So instead of saying this is capital that we're receiving, then it becomes a Treasury investment where that money then directly goes out to payment of certain item line that Treasury wanted to see that they are sorted out, like your interest on then debt repayment with the World Bank, IMF. Like your aspect of ensuring that you've got a diesel budget that is sufficient enough, as well as ensuring that you've got your maintenance program running. But at the same time, they have to look out where, as much as the injection comes in, which is like a subsidy onto Eskom, what else can they do to generate revenue? Which means in this case, they have to tax out customers by increasing their tariff in order to recover that amount of money. So Eskom doesn't owe... for instance, anything else except the World Bank and IMF right now as we speak, right?
Yeah.
That's the debt that is sitting against Eskom. The rest of the money that is coming out from Treasury is to just save that debt. And Eskom does not have to pay it back to Treasury. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So it's a capital injection whereby Treasury will take it because Treasury is the shareholder representative of South Africans. Treasury takes it out of our taxes and then gives it to Eskom in order to help it with its capital situation.
If I recall, Adil, that 254 billion by government, right, to the utility last year, it came with a long list of conditions by national treasury. So that would have been, you know, last year in essence, and pretty early, you know, in the game last year. Have we been able as Eskom to keep to those list of conditions by National Treasury so that, you know, that disposure of you know, money flows then towards Eskom because you get the money on condition. In your knowledge, have they been, you know, keeping on the straight and narrow to the kind of conditions that were said to be applied?
As of last year March, or even let's say a year before last year March,
yeah,
when they introduced the new chairman for Makwana, there's been a diligent effort to ensure that Eskom was paying back its debt and was keeping up within the line. And that is why there was a very strong relationship between Treasury as well as the board of Eskom when Mpo was existent. And you remember that letter when Mpo requested that they should not disclose the losses of Eskom at the JSE so that it actually cushions out the investors' confidence against Eskom.
Yeah.
You know, so that money, whenever they've been receiving money, they've been directing it accordingly to what is desired programs. You know, and that money hasn't had any hiccups of being either stolen, corruption. The only thing is there's been a very concern is over the last year until maybe late last year, there was a huge overrun in terms of diesel spent, which was raised, and it was something that eventually Eskom got a hold of it and started literally reducing the level of diesel spend and expenditure on diesel and too much reliance on diesel. Instead, they turned the tables around. They went and fixed the power plants that needed to be fixed. And then they shifted away from the reliance on diesel to now putting it as an emergency backup with Eskom in case they require additional power plants that can be fired up immediately and up and run. And this is where diesel comes in the open gas cycle, OCGTs, open.
I suppose, Adil, the one leads to the other. I mean, you know, if you were beginning to get your coal-fired power stations running, right, instead of them failing constantly, and things which were neglected are now maintained and things are working, then it makes sense that you might have a figure of, you know, you have reduced in this financial year by 67% compared to the same period last year on diesel. I mean, that's the one is just leads to the other. It's not as though the diesel story is a good news story. The good news story is the Eskom story.
Yeah, power plant.
That's it.
Yeah, so the power plants are being restored and there's a recovery on that major breakdowns because it was about 18,000. It then averaged around 16,000 megawatts in terms of UCLF, which is unplanned capacity loss factor of breakdowns in power plants.
Yeah.
So they've reduced that 16,000 to down to almost now, I think they're creeping around 11,000 megawatts, which means they've recovered a lot of the plant. They've been doing quite good maintenance to keep the lights off, to keep the lights on, and to make sure that the power plants, whenever there's a breakdown, it does not affect the country to the level where they should actually be calling for a load shedding stage. So that has been a massive, massive plus. And remember, I think they introduced the generation recovery plan. In that generation recovery, they said that what are we going to do is we're going to revive and bring back all the power stations that are currently struggling and that should be functioning.
That's additional generation units.
Exactly, yeah.
The ones that they said would be scheduled to come on before the end of the year.
Yeah, and the other ones that they wanted to shut down.
Yeah, that's it.
Because there were quite a few of them that were under the list of shutdowns.
Yeah.
And those shutdowns have now been stopped, and Eskom says we're going to use them indefinitely until 2030. Because we are in an emergency situation, we will still do the shutting down of the plants, but we cannot do it in an environment where we are needy and we don't have an alternative against those power plants. You know, so that's when the intervention came in to say, no, why must we shut down power plants that are effectively healthy, that are operational, and the only thing is everybody claims that they have reached the end of life and must be shut down. Whereas in this case, if a power plant is maintained and is operational, there is no such a thing called end of life. You can continue it for 50, 100 years. I mean, take an example of Cuba. There's not a single power plant that has been built from scratch since
the
existence of the Cuba state. It's been like 50, 60 years now. In those 60 years, those plants are operating efficiently, are being maintained. Yes, there's problems because there is shortage of electricity generation capacity, but they are fixing the same power plants for almost what? They almost 100 years now. Because they inherited them from the Batista government at the time. And they just kept them running and running and running and running. And they're still running them till today. So it shows you the science around power station is you can run them indefinitely as long as you're doing the proper work, your maintenance, your aspect of ensuring that it meets the environmental air quality and pollution requirement, at the same time making sure that you're refurbishing them. You know, and that's what has been happening.
Adil, in about 2 minutes, Adil, what would necessitate, you know, an element where load shedding comes back? What is the scenario that would bring load shedding back? I love the system at the moment. I don't want to jinx it. And things are working. And like you're saying, the good news story is Eskom, and then you get the benefits of the diesel and all the other things, whatever. What would necessitate, you know, an element of maybe load shedding, but not to the extent that we saw it before, but that it returns in a particular way?
When they start shutting down power plants, that's the number one.
Okay.
When they start neglecting maintaining power plants.
As is the story before then.
Yeah. The minute they start shutting down power plants and taking them offline and being challenged with all other issues, then you're going to have the turn of load shedding. But if they keep maintaining at the rate that they're maintained, there is no need to be having current challenges. But the other thing is, if the economy grows and there is a huge surge in demand of electricity during this peak winter, if they can survive this winter, there's no any other reason why they should be struggling in summer unless they are going to be taking out a lot of power stations out for maintenance in order to bring it back at a later stage. But if they could survive this winter, which is now the harshest one, right? We're in the deep of it. The temperatures are dropping and everything, and yet the system is not falling. Then there is no reason there should be load shedding into the future. Like what we used to enjoy, where there was a load shedding free years over years. I mean, like 10 years ongoing.
Yeah.
You know, so this whole introduction of load shedding was something that was designed out of boardrooms in order to profiteer out of Eskom. They had the crisis and at the same time have a solution for it. So it was not a technical problem which South Africa has suddenly been befallen by a catastrophe like a plague and people must have no electricity. There's no plague in engineering. It's machinery, people, as well as technical processes. You follow those things according to Narata, you will have an operational machinery that runs and runs optimally. You know, so if they start neglecting maintenance, they start taking out power plant units, taking them offline and not bringing them back, you're going to have the shortage of electricity, and then you're going to have now the element of the demand not matching the capacity available. So that's when you're going to have electricity load shedding. And when they don't spend time and money on ensuring that they actually incentivize the people looking after the system. Remember the issue of sabotages, where they said somebody will just plug out a component and then throw in a screwdriver, and the screwdriver messes up the cranks or whatever. And then it goes into the processes or the machinery, and it destroys things. And then suddenly you have to bring a unit to a halt. So if those kind of things start happening once again, people start looking for an opportunity to charge Eskom for repairs. You know, and they said it was done by a contractor, by the way, who wanted to have engineering work because they know if something is not broken, they are not called in to do repairs. Yeah. So if Eskom focuses on what it's been doing now, on generation recovery plan, and they do it at a systematic level, professionally, they deliver and they incentivize the workers,
then we're good.
You have no reason to have load shedding. But again, load shedding is a commercial entity. It's an interest for money because people make a lot of money and they make huge amounts of money with a crisis like load shedding.
Adil and Chabeleng. You know, I learn every day, and Adil and Chabeleng. I learn every day.
Thank you so much.
I learn every day. You know, I come prepared with my notes from our last conversation, and I'm like, I'm ready for Adil, and I come prepared, and then Adil educates me again. Adil and Chabeleng. You know what, bro? It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely.
And love chatting to you, man.
Thank you so much.
Adil and Chabeleng, of course, energy experts.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.